The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com.
Welcome to the Arty Girl Podcast, where we dive into all things art and culture of Palm Beach County. I'm your host, Sarah LaPierre, and I'm here today with a wonderful guest. She is a multi-talented musician, a Florida local, a West Palm Beach local. She's a one-woman band with performances all across Palm Beach County and even some internationally. So I'm very excited to talk to Victoria Cardona.
Howdy.
What up, Palm? Thanks for being here.
Yeah,
this is actually, you're the first musician that I've been able to have on this show. So I'm very excited to have this genre of art be present.
Awesome. Happy to be
here. Yeah. And have some conversations with you. So let's start off with a little bit of background for people to get to know you more. You are from West Palm Beach. You're a Cuban American, first generation, I believe.
Correct.
So how does that heritage influence the passion for music in your life?
Well, I'm born and raised here in West Palm. Growing up, I just had constantly listening to the music that my grandparents were playing in the house, the food, just the culture. And, you know, it's left a huge mark on just the music that I gravitate towards. It's the Latin, you know, rhythms have a strong undertone of everything that I do.
That's awesome. And now you remind me, you received formal training. You went to school for music. Can you tell us about that background? Like how that, I think it led you further north, right?
Yes. So I ended up in St. Paul, Minnesota. I was at a school called McNally Smith College of Music. Fortunately, they're no longer around. But I studied orchestration and composition. And, you know, not so much guitar performance. I did study with some really great teachers before heading to college. But decided to take a little bit different route and all that. And absorbed all that, played with a bunch of bands and toured around the Midwest at the same time while out there. And, you know, wrapped up school and decided that I had to get back to the South, to the warmth, and started doing looping as a means of, you know, wanting to make a living playing music. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you know, trying to put a band together and, you know, the great musicians that I was hoping to play with were already in serious projects, didn't really have the time to commit the time that I needed, you know. And so I started with a loop pedal and started adding instruments and, you know, having fun with it. And it's just evolved to where it is now.
That's awesome. So I know you're performing all over Palm Beach County, mm-hmm. Internationally as well.
Yes.
Are there any, you know, really memorable performances that stand out to you? I know that's
a lot.
Yeah.
You know, one really cool one. So I would spend, this was more before COVID. I would spend 3 to 4 months out of the year in the summer months when things slow down here off season. I'd go over to Spain, Canary Islands, Mallorca. And one summer, I was in a little island called Lanzarote. It's one of the Canary Islands. It's off the coast. It's a little tiny island off the coast of Africa. And I was playing with this duo and trio, drummer buddy and a sax player. And, you know, I'd been there for a couple months already. I say it was like probably July. And, you know, I call my buddy up. So, hey, what are we playing today? He goes, today is festival. It's Noche Blanca, which means the night of white. They're like, all right, cool, a festival, all right. So as the day goes on, I'm walking around, there's bands setting up all over the streets with these huge setups, just vendors and costumes and people in like the traditional Canarian costumes. There's puppets and kites and just something big was going to happen. So I was like, oh my God. So my buddy comes to pick me up. I said, well, where are we playing? He's like, you'll see. So we go to the north end of the island. We're going up this mountain, tiny little roads. I'm like, oh my God. We end up at this site called Jameos del Agua, which I'd heard about. It's like, it's a cultural center. It's a touristic spot. You know, it's one of the highlights when you go there, a place to check out. And I was like, we're playing here. And basically, it was created by an erupted volcano. It was a series of lava tunnels with a huge caverns. And he's like, all right, let's go. Let's pull in the gear. We're setting up in this huge cavern with the craziest acoustics, just naturally. And we ended up that night doing a gig with, we had a drummer friend, myself, a sax player, and then a group of flamenco musicians.
Wow.
So it was this crazy fusion of like Afro-Cuban music, like funky blues, jazz stuff, and then like a flamenco counterpart to it. It was incredible. One of the larger crowds I've ever played to, and I mean, just the acoustics alone.
That was amazing. And of course, the energy that comes along with being in this incredible natural space, but also being a part of it, a festival and a whole celebration beyond that.
Yeah.
How does that, again, not a musician.
Yeah.
So how does that come together in the moment in a performance? Did you have opportunities to rehearse or practice with the other musicians, or is it kind of a jam band and you follow each other's lead and you know what you're doing?
It's a very fly by the seat of your pants kind of situation. Just listen more than you play. Agree on a key before you start. But thankfully, these were all really accomplished, really wonderful musicians that were on it with their craft. So, it's just kind of picking up on the energy of the players and, more importantly, the room, you know, the spectators, the audience. That's what really drives the whole thing. So
fun. So when you, besides playing here, are you typically here in season and then traveling outside of that? Is that how that?
Typically, yes. For the last, I'm going to say 2 years, I haven't done my summer travel as extensively to Spain because I've been trying to wrap up my debut record.
Amazing. Okay. I have some questions about that too. I want to know more about this looping process. It's kind of a blend of art and science, the technical skill that comes along with like live looping and not having the opportunity to edit yourself. How did you get into that process? I know, like you said, some of the musicians that you might have wanted to form a band with weren't available. So it kind of came down to being able to be a one-woman band.
Yeah. Science, that sounds cool. I don't see it as science, but it's cool. I actually started looping. I used a very simple loop pedal, when I was first getting into music theory and learning scales and learning how to improvise on guitar. I use it as a tool just to lay down a track so that I would have something consistent to play to. And like I had said earlier, once I got back to Florida from college, it was a way to perform as a soloist with just more sound, with more excitement in a set. And it allows me to change it up from show to show. So a song that I play today, you know, might be at 120 beats per minute, and tomorrow I'm a little more amped up and we do it at 130 beats per minute. So it allows that freedom. It is similar to what happens in a music studio where, you know, you lay down tracks and then you overdub, which is you superimpose layers of other instruments. But it is all live and all on the fly. So, the trick is get the first layer correct and in time, and then from there, you know,
solid foundation, and you can build on top of that smoothly. Yeah.
You have a better chance of it all staying together, you know. So still learning. It's the coolest thing is I love to watch other loopers because everybody uses the pedal and the technology in a different way, and it's pretty cool.
And your main instrument is the guitar.
Yes.
Yeah. Are there others that you involve, like that you're physically playing?
Yes. So in my current setup, it's gone through many evolutions. I'd say that to date, I have the most simple setup with the least amount of counterparts, which it's taken me a while because I want to bring all the toys, you know, but I also don't want to break down the setup all the time.
Yeah.
So right now, in this set, I will play guitar, bass guitar, Obviously, I sing, I do vocals, and I do vocal harmonies. And then I bring a plethora of percussion instruments. So shakers, Afro-Cuban instruments like la guira, cowbells and woodblocks. And I have a percussion pad that allows me to play congas and timbales and a drum set and all sorts of different sounds like that. But
cool. So let's talk about some community here locally in Palm Beach County. I know you've performed at a lot of venues. What do you think makes Palm Beach County a special place to be a performing musician in?
I think that we're very blessed here to have, the seasonal uptick that we have. Obviously, the seasonal people that come to stay here, but we're also in a place, we live in paradise, so people want to come here and be part of this, which, allows us to have a place to play and people to play to. A lot of waterfront venues that support the musicians, and give us a place to do our thing. We're very lucky to have great musicians in our area and just a great community overall. I noticed this going overseas, and even though I was, I'd call it a working vacation, I'd feel like I'm playing, but I'd also feel kind of like a tourist, right? But then I'd come back here and I'd see people that were on vacation. I'm like there, I was just on vacation. It's like we live in paradise. So it's amazing,
That's awesome.
You're blessed.
How do you view collaborations in your industry? It's something I'm curious about, especially, as someone who's often working solo.
Yeah.
Whether that's other musicians, producers, editors, what do you think are some of your favorite ways to get to work with other people in your industry?
The collaboration thing is huge. I think that this has become most apparent to me in the last couple of years with working on my upcoming record, in the sense that I come from a background of blues and jazz and Caribbean music. My producer comes from a background of country, rock and roll, folk, Americana music. And the goal was to create a strongly Latin-influenced record. So, two schools of thought. And so how are we going to make this work? And the magic is in, the tools that he has in his toolbox and mine, and trying to make art out of that. It's kind of maneuvering things in a way where until you come up with something that floats your boat, I think it pulls, it allows you to see things differently,
Yeah. What has the writing process been like for you? What does that look like when you get into, is there a certain pattern that you follow every time you sit down to write, or is it kind of whenever it comes to you? Do you have a series of things that you do to get into like a studio practice before you write something down?
A lot of it, to be honest with you, a lot of it comes to me just doing day-to-day things. A line or a word will pop into my head and I can write it down. I've got a million notes in my phone, and in the car, there's something magical about the movement, sensory things passing you by and that. There are times where I know I have to write something, so it's all right, let's sit down and do this. But I find that the latter is the kind of how it mostly happens for me.
Yeah. Coming to you in daily life or when you're in the field or playing or other times, like you said, driving in the car. I know a lot of people, any kind of artist, I feel like at some point has said they find inspiration in the shower, because yeah, that's a similar effect where your mind can kind of stray a little bit.
Yeah.
And you can still, you can
totally.
Not have the intensity of having to focus on it as a task, but it's just there.
Right.
And you can mull around.
Stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk about the album more. I know you you landed this amazing fellowship, right? You
yes.
have worked with the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County.
I have.
And tell us the name of that fellowship.
It is the Artist in Industry.
It's the Innovation.
Artist Innovation. Oh, my bad.
Artist Innovation.
Yeah.
So I know they're, you know, they every year, and I think it's grown a little bit, they have more artists now in the fellowship program, which is awesome that they've been able to, you know, offer those grants and have them available. For you, what does that process look like? I know it's a timed fellowship.
Yes.
And you have to, you know, determine ahead of time as you apply what your focus is going to be as the artist. It's an amazing fellowship because you really get to say, this is what I want to focus on. And they're like, great.
Yes.
Go do it.
Yes.
They give you the funds and they give you, you know, that chunk of time, obviously, within to work. And they just want to support what artists are really passionate and interested in doing. So what did that look like for you? How did you approach that and say, I want to make this out?
So the fellowship has been one of the greatest gifts as of late. I had started working on this record beforehand, had gotten to a point where funds and had become tight, and we were deciding, like, how are we going to wrap this up? You know, because we could have gone one route where we used synthesized instruments, computer-based instruments, which is okay. They were sounding pretty good, but my dream was really to have, you know, the real congas, the real timbales, the real upright bass. And so when I applied, you know, my mission was to complete this album, put it through its mastering, and then get it into the hands of a promoter, of a radio promoter. And so far, I mean, it's allowed me just that, to complete the record. We're going to be mastering here next week, which is super exciting. And it's allowed me the opportunity to be in the same room and play with some of my musical heroes, which has been one of probably the most amazing experience of my life.
All right. Before we get to the next question, we are just going to take a quick minute to have a word from our sponsor, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait, because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces. Spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
So for today's Medical Minute, I'm here with Dr. Sonia Olson, a liver specialist for the TGH Digestive Health Center. We're going to talk about fatty liver disease. That sounds really bad, doc. So tell me more about it. What is it?
Fatty liver disease is not good. And unfortunately, there is an epidemic of fatty liver disease in this country. This is a disease where the liver inappropriately stores fat. Over time, that fat causes inflammation and even scar tissue and could cause cirrhosis.
How do you know you have it, doc?
Fatty liver disease most of the time does not cause symptoms until it's very advanced.
Should I go out and get a test right now?
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't think so, but okay. You can't tell if someone has fatty liver disease by looking at them. We do know that some patients are at higher risk, so any patient with type 2 diabetes should be screened, and any patient with metabolic syndrome, so two or more risk factors, such as obesity, hypertension, high cholesterol, or sleep apnea. These patients should also get screened.
How do you treat fatty liver disease?
Well, diet and exercise go a long way in both preventing and treating fatty liver disease, but now there is a medication available for certain patients with fatty liver disease, making the conversation with your doctor even more important.
Awesome, doc. Well, that's some great information. Thank you so much. And that was your Medical Minute here with Dr. Olson. Thanks so much for coming out.
Yeah, that's amazing. You get to, you know, like you said, you get a refreshment of funds from this, and it gives you the studio time or the opportunity to, you know, call in people that you've wanted to work with or, you know, needed to take that next step as an artist. I think a lot of professional artists could relate to, like, yeah, we made this awesome piece of art. Now we just need to get it out there.
Right.
And get it heard in front of people, you know, expand the audience that you could find, you know, just on your own gigging or through social media or through your own outreach, you know, the world beyond.
Really putting stigmas on this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And when this fellowship comes to a head, there's also a showcase, right? At the end of it. Yes. So what does that look like for you?
So the showcase, the opening day, the showcase will be running at the, it's myself and the 9 other fellows. Each of us have a different discipline. So there's visual artists, sculptors, just an array of different artists. And so beginning on July 11th, July 10th is opening day. We'll be running through the month of July at the Cultural Council Center in
Their headquarters in Lake Worth. Yeah. It's a beautiful building.
Yeah, we kind of divvy up the room, the space, into different exhibitions for each, exhibits for each of the artists. At the moment, as much as I would love to play the music live, I'm playing with a 10-piece band, so it's going to be a little tricky to get everybody together for that. So I will be playing excerpts of the record. We'll be displaying some of the artwork and also photographs and that have been taken along the way in the studio and just throughout the creation of the whole project. And we filmed a zero budget music video, which I have to say, for zero budget, we did pretty good.
I love it.
I think we'll be airing that also. So the final details are still in the works for that, but something along those lines.
Yeah, and that doesn't happen until I think mid or sometime in April.
We will be finalizing the project by April.
Yeah.
And then our exhibit will be in July. Come out and check it out. It'll be running for about a month.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, one of my previous guests on the show here, Jose, he's a fellow this year as well.
Oh, awesome.
And he's doing some really interesting work, kind of getting into more 3D work, sculptural elements. He's been a painter, he draws, but I'm excited to see. So it'll be a great exhibit this year for sure.
Yes, just to be so cool to see everybody's, project, in the same room. It's
definitely. So I'm curious to this question. What are some of the common or maybe uncommon challenges that you face as a performing musician in Palm Beach County?
I think that when things get a little hairy is the summer, not because of the heat, but just because things slow down off season. And there's so many great players in our area. We're very fortunate to have the scene that we have. Things just slow down and it's kind of a fight for what's left as far as work. But I've learned over the decade of doing this is just, season's always great and prepare during the season for, the slowest summer you could possibly see. Yeah. And you'll be okay, but I'd say it's not a huge problem to have. I think we're pretty lucky.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, you have clearly a sense of optimism that works well, that you know the season's going to come around again and you'll be able to fill up once more, and that keeps the work going.
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword. At the same time, that downtime is a great time to recharge and work on new material and prep for brighter day.
How often are you working on new material?
I'm always working on something, be it, instrumental things or something for my live performance or original stuff, recording. It's kind of a always ongoing.
So do you have a favorite local venue that you play at?
Ooh, I've got a few. I love outdoor gigs. I like being by the water. One of my favorites ongoing is Guanabana's in Juke.
Really fun venue.
Yeah,
gorgeous place to be. They have some really fun musicians come through there too. I feel like it's always, they keep it interesting.
Yeah. Island vibes, beautiful, great sound. It's a blast.
Yeah, if people haven't been, that's a good spot to visit.
Check it out. Yeah. Family coming into town, take them to Guanabana's.
Yeah, for sure. And if you feel like hopping off on a paddle board, like on the back or rolling up in your boat, you can do that too, right?
Totally. Highly recommend.
You don't have to arrive by car. Yeah, that's a great spot. There's a question that I had for later on, but I'll ask it now because I always ask this question to all the guests because I want to know the spots. If people are visiting or living here, what is one place or one event or one arts and culture related thing that you want, like, wish everybody would know about and go experience?
You know, I think I've performed at it for the last few years. I have to say that one of the coolest events is the Lake Worth Street Painting Festival.
Oh, that's a really cool one.
I love that. You know, it's a weekend long of people literally creating murals on the street. And the cool thing is, if you go the first day, you know, you see people just starting. And then by the second or third day, you see these fully finished works of art.
Yeah.
A lot of them are 3D. You feel like you're walking through the sidewalk, mm-hmm. you know.
And then all the rest of the street is super lively, too, because it's lined with shops and restaurants and all these little interesting places to kind of pop into. I mean, Lake Worth is a gem.
Absolutely.
Of the arts and culture community. There's so much density right there. I mean, even like Hatch down the street and the other festivals that they put on throughout the year. But that's a great one. I've said this before on the show. I am forever impressed by those artists getting out there on the pavement in God knows what weather. It's Florida. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Chances are there's some heat and some potential rain involved.
Yeah.
But I mean, they persevere. They're out there and they create these amazing, extremely temporary works of art.
Yeah.
It provides like a lot of inspiration and energy to people to see that, you know, and it's something that I know hundreds of people look forward to annually. And it's hugely attended. If you've ever attended, you know, because you've had trouble, you know, having to like park way far away or take a trolley in. I know they get better about it every year with the alternatives that they, you know,
definitely
can help people get there. But yeah, that's an awesome one.
Yeah.
I love that spot. How about let's talk about some of your influences to your music. You have this range of genres, Afro-Cuban, jazz, blues. Who are some of the musicians that you might consider influences to your work?
Well, the reason I started playing guitar was because of Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Awesome. Love Stevie.
Yeah. I was, say,
R.I.P.
Yes. About 12 or 13 years old, I heard Texas Flood and I was like, I want to do that. Like, that's what I want to do. Pestered my parents forever for a guitar. And eventually got a hold of one and started self-teaching and then eventually get some lessons. And that's so it all started with Stevie. Natural progression, Jimi Hendrix, Freddie King, Albert King, the blues guys. I found a great teacher named Frank Axtell, phenomenal guy from West Palm. To study with, and he got me into, you know, jazz studies, which is the next level. And that led to, you know, influences like Charlie Parker and Miles Davis and John Coltrane. And then I get to college and I'm studying jazz, but I like to jam. Not everybody plays jazz. So you find this midway. And that's how I discovered the Grateful Dead, which is a huge influence of mine. And, you know, around that same time, that's when I kind of rediscovered the Afro-Cuban side of things because I had been away from home. Obviously, in a Cuban household, the music's going, Celia Cruz, you know, Johnny Pacheco, all of the standards are always playing in the house. And I hadn't heard that music for a year or two. And so one day I'm in a class and we were in some sort of lecture and the instructor started playing the Buena Vista Social Club. And at the time, I didn't know they were the Buena Vista Social Club, but I recognized the song and it just like goosebumps. Like it was like just a out of body experience in a way. I was like, oh my gosh, like that. And so that's when I really started diving into that world. I studied congas and Latin percussion. And it's just all been a big mix of blues artists, jazz artists, and the Latin artists.
That's awesome. Yeah. And many of the albums and musicians that you mentioned were standard rotations, you know, growing up. And my dad was an artist as well. And his studio was constantly filled with music, whether it was music that we were listening to or music that he was playing. He had there was a place in Palm Beach Gardens that he had as a studio after he got too large for our home studio that he used to work out of. There was like art in all of our bedrooms and he couldn't fit there anymore. So he finally got another place. But a room of that became just a music studio because he was kind of a musician for the first half of his life. And then that led into painting. And then he's kind of switched what he did full time.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, all those greats were a heavy, heavy rotation for, you know, inspiration when he was painting. So yeah. Some good ones. Yeah. Your live performances, I read as described, both sonic and visual experiences. So I wanted to ask about like what the visual might aspect of that might be and if you're drawing inspiration from other art forms.
The visual component is the fact that I'm playing real instruments right in front of you. So and I'm constantly switching things and grabbing things. It's a very visual thing. You literally can watch a piece of music come together. As far as other art forms, I love film. I love visual arts. In my songwriting, my style of writing is very very full of imagery. They're almost like little movies in a sense. So I would say that film and visual art.
That's awesome. You mentioned a music video earlier that goes along with your debut album.
Yes.
How do you decide what song is going to be the first one that, you know, or the one that becomes a music video? Why did you pick the one that you picked?
The one that I picked is a song called ¿Qué Pasó? Which in Spanish translates to what happened. And the song talks about, what's been happening in Cuba for the past 75 years. And I chose this song because it's very honest in its writing. It is a topic that I feel that not enough people know the depths of everything, of the true story. And I just had a vision of being able to incorporate old scenes of old Cuba and just that vibe into visual. You know, the music is in a very traditional Cuban form. It's the lyrics are in English, which is like a juxtaposition there. And then, just the imagery, trying to depict the imagery of the song. You know?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm sure it's, you know, something that you and the people who worked on it with you are going to be really excited to actually get out in the world.
We're stoked to drop it.
And it's a beautiful way, of course, always, you know, artists through forever have been using their art forms as a way to tell stories of importance and value and history and just another way to try and connect people to what, you know, has actually been happening for, like you said, the past 75 years.
Right.
So that's a really cool way to, you know, put it to them with your music and the visuals that go along with it.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear more. I know people can connect with you in various ways, and I'm going to make sure I get to that. But first I want to ask, is there a dream project of yours?
Up until recently, my dream project was literally putting this record together. If you had asked me a couple of years ago, I would have told you I want to make a record with amazing musicians in a vein of Latin music, Afro-Caribbean. We've accomplished that. So my dream now is to be able to perform this record live with the musicians that are on the tracks would be great. Where they come from all over the world, so it'd be an interesting feat to pull that off. But just in general, to perform it live in its entirety.
So, how does one put those steps into action as a musician? I mean, I know you're part of the fellowship is you're going to be working with somebody who can get the album out there in front of other people. When you do these other venues that you perform at, is that something that you will start to integrate to places that you regularly play, or are you going to completely seek out like new venues, new opportunities just for this album?
I think it would be seeking out just different venues. First and foremost, we're talking about like a 10-piece band, so it can't just
not the same.
Any little note, you know. we would hope for larger venues, you know, theater style, just actual venues.
You know. All right. Can you tell us like maybe what the vibe of the album is, if you had to describe it that way?
Yeah. You know, it's very strongly rooted in Caribbean Latin rhythms. It's all original music. A lot of the lyrics are biographical. There's stories of being on the road and, you know, stories of my family coming to this country from Cuba and what they all had to go through to get here. It's a big mix, you know, of kind of all my influences, but I'd say it has a really strong Latin undertone.
Nice. I'm excited to hear it. So lastly, some advice and insights, you know, as someone who's balanced a performance schedule and now, you know, preparing this album, what would be some advice that you'd like to leave for people who are maybe looking to either be performance solo, you know, musicians and book some gigs, whether locally or elsewhere,
right,
or somebody who's wants, you know, their dream now is to put together that album.
Right.
What do you think you'd leave for them?
I'd say just hone your craft. Do what sounds good to you. Don't necessarily try to do what's correct or what's in style sonically at the time or in any discipline of art. Just create fearlessly and just go out and do it. You know, I kind of come from a place where I was told that, yeah, it's a really hard way to make a living. Do you really want to do this? I can't imagine doing anything else. And for me, like I literally knocking on doors like, hey, you know, can I play here? Play for free, you know, and eventually it starts picking up traction. But just create, you know, always create and keep evolving, you know, with what you do.
Yeah. Love that. That's great. So lastly, then really finally, where can people connect with you? You know, whether that's a website, social media, YouTube, or somewhere that directs them to a performance that they come see.
Yeah. So I post all of my shows on my website, which is victoriacardona.com. I'm on social media. You can find updates on my record and its whole status on Facebook, Victoria Cardona, on my Instagram, Victoria Cardona Music. And also, you can join my mailing list, which there's links on my social media, but that is victoriacardonamusic@gmail.com. You just drop me your name in the subject line and you're part of our list and we'll keep you in the loop of all that's coming out, all that's happening.
I love it. Well, thank you again for being here today and like making the time to have this conversation. I really appreciate it. I feel like I learned a lot in a short amount of time. And I'm excited for this showcase coming up in July. I will definitely be there to check it out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again. We appreciate you listening in, tuning in, our viewers and listeners. Thank you so much for being here with us. A huge thank you, as always, to the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County for sponsoring this season of the Artie Raw podcast. And I'll see you on the next episode.